All right. So we are making our way through Ecclesiastes. And so this week we're going to be looking at chapter 3. If you have a Bible, you can turn there, chapter 3 in Ecclesiastes. And there's really no better way. Now, I didn't test this, but there's really no better way to kick off Ecclesiastes chapter 3 than with a little birds. We'll see if this actually works. It may not. That happens. Uh-oh. We could. There it goes. Just going to set the tone here for a second. You can read along with your Bible, by the way, because they're literally just going through this. Anybody know what version they're using? Yeah, is it NIV? Are they using NIV, King James? I don't know. Yeah, okay. All right. All right, we got to keep moving. That was fun. All right, so here we are. This is a time... There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. So in this point in the book, right, the teacher is taking us on this journey, and he is unpacking life for us. And now he's going to stop, and he's going to address for this chapter one of those realities of life that we all experience, and that very simply is time, the passage of time, seasonal change. And what does that look like, and what is he going to tell us about that? And so he gives us these verses that the birds so kindly put to music for us so we can always remember them. And so I'll just read this quickly. A time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent, excuse me, that was a mistake. We're going to get to her in a second. A time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. And so when we read this, we do have to ask this question, like, what is he trying to tell us? Like, what is he telling us about the nature of time, about how we experience time? Yeah, it changes, okay? There's something else going on here. There's actually a lot going on here. We're going to unpack some of it, not all of it. But when I read this, there's a sense here in which the seasons are inevitable. Right, there's a sense in which they are going to happen, whether you like them or not. And so he begins with a time to be born and a time to die. Like, you don't get to choose that. This is simply the season for which you are to be born, and so therefore you are born. There's a season in which you will die, and so you will die. And so the question then comes up, it's like, is he telling us that these are seasons that there's an inevitability to them? Is this almost a fatalistic? Is this going to happen? Are we supposed to simply recognize the season and then don't worry about it? This is what is going to happen? Is that what he's trying to get at? Because if he is, then he sounds a little bit like Doris Day. Because what does Doris Day say? Que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. Thank you, sir. I really wondered, I thought I was going to have to like, I wondered how long that was going to take for some of these people, but you're right. Does everybody know this song? Because it's super annoying. Yeah. I'm going to get, this is my gift to you for this morning. What will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what you said. Whatever will be. You will be. Everybody. The future's ours to see. Que sera, sera. All right. So, by the way, if you want to Google her actually singing that, you can watch her singing that, and it is... her mouth opens so widely. Have you noticed that? Like, you should watch it. It's like, like it's like her jaw is unhinging. It is a bit remarkable to watch. Anyway, so is this what Qoheleth is saying? Is this what the teacher is saying? Whatever will be, so don't worry about it. So let's unpack time just a little bit here. Okay, we're not going to go Einstein on you, but let's delve into how we understand and how we think about time just a little bit. So there's a guy named Michael Fox, not Michael J. Fox, Michael V. Fox. And he's a theologian, and he wrote, I think, one of the better commentaries, sort of technical commentaries on Ecclesiastes. And in this, when he gets to this passage, he's going to say that there's a couple of different ways that we can think about time. And I think this is helpful. He says, on the one hand, we can think about time, and he's going to put it this way, temporally, okay? Specific duration of time. So this has to do with thinking about time as almost like time on a calendar. So you think of it being from this date to this day. This is this season of time. Think of it of like the term of a president. So Obama's term or his two terms were from this date to this day. That is the duration of time. And it doesn't really matter what happens in that time. It's based on the date, okay? And the day determines, in some sense, what happens during that time. So bear with me here for a second. So this is really odd, but none of my notes are showing up, and I don't know why that is. So this will just be enjoy the ride. This will be really fun. So here's maybe the best way to illustrate this. If you see time temporally, or you view time temporally, then when you think about what you're going to wear in the morning, you're going to dress according to the calendar, not the weather. So think of this in terms of literal seasons, right? So you might look like this guy, because the calendar says it's spring. I don't care what the weather is like. I'm going to dress like it's spring. Okay, so this is a little bit drastic. He's from Wisconsin. He doesn't even care. So yeah, and he's in college. Who knows where he woke up that morning? Okay, so this is a little bit drastic, but actually in past generations, this was kind of a thing. So it used to be, I don't know how strictly people take this anymore, but it's like after Labor Day, you don't wear white or linen. Anybody ever hear that? Okay, when I got married, I was informed of that. After Memorial or before Memorial Day, you can wear corduroy, and after you can. Anyway, so there's these types of things that they have. That I may have just made that one up. So this is dressing according to the calendar, not the weather, okay? But there's a second way to think about time that Fox offers us, and that is to think about time substantively or substantively, depending on, you know, tomato, tomato. And this is what happens during that time. So with the first view of time, It's the duration of time that happens and the seasons, regardless of what happens during that. So it's after Labor Day, so you don't care what the weather is like. Here in Dallas, you don't care that it's 95 degrees. It's October, so you're going to dress for October, okay? It's a terrible idea, by the way. But with this view, you see things differently. You're looking at the weather, not the calendar. So you don't care that it's October, it's 95 degrees. You're going to wear shorts and a t-shirt. So you're concerned about what is happening in that season, what's actually happening in place, what's actually taking place. You don't care what this calendar says. So what Qoheleth here, what he's doing, I think, is that what he's telling us, you need to look at the season, not the calendar date, but the weather, and determine what season are you in. And then he's going to say, how will you then live? How will you respond to the weather of your season, okay? So what he's describing here is that there are times in our lives where the circumstances, the occasions, the events, they are ripe for something to happen. There is a right time for birth to occur. There's a right time, all the circumstances where we should mend, as he's going to say, to sow. And there's other times where it's not. And so are you aware of the season that you're in? Are you able to gauge the weather? Or do you fight against the weather? See, one of our problems is that we don't always like the season that we're in, and we can be very stubborn about it. And instead of saying, well, look, the weather has changed, things have changed in my life, we can be inflexible. And we say, no, I'm going to, you know, we're like the first guy. I'm going to dress in shorts. I don't care what the weather is like. I will live this way, and I'm not going to change. I'm not going to adapt. One commentator puts it this way: because we are committed to arrange life the way that we want it and to avoid what we do not prefer, many of us remain inflexible and unskilled in this wisdom of seasons. See, Kohelet is saying, are you wise? Are you wise? Are you able to see the season that you're in? Can you tell what the temperature is? Can you see what is going on around you and then respond accordingly? Now, Bono has something to say about this. And you are such a fool to worry like you do. Oh. I know it's tough and you can never get enough of what you don't really need now. My, oh my. You've got to get yourself together. You've got stuck in a moment. You don't care what the season is. You don't care how it's changed. You've got stuck in a moment and now you can't get out of it. Don't say that later will be better. Now you're stuck in a moment and you can't get out of it. See, some of us, we get stuck. You ever been stuck? I've been stuck. And I am unwilling to recognize that a season that I was in has changed. And instead of accepting the fact that seasons come and go, I can rage against it. I can wistfully wish that life was different. I can be stubborn and say, no, I refuse to accept this change in my situation or this change in my season. And the problem is that will only disappoint. It will only frustrate me. Instead, what we need to do is we need to listen to the sage advice of the wizard. Because when Frodo says, I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish I had never seen times like these. Gandalf says, so do I. And so do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. There's a lot of wisdom in that. And this is what Kohelet is saying. He's saying, do you know what season you're in? And then are you willing to live in light of the season, to act or to refrain from acting, to speak or to be silent, to sow or to uproot, to mend or to tear? Like, what does that moment call for, to laugh or to mourn? What does that moment call for? What is that season in your life calling for? Are you willing? You can't control those things. Instead, dress according to the weather. Doesn't he just look, he looks so much happier, right? Dress for the weather, not the calendar. Dress for the weather, not the calendar. And so what Kohelet is going to tell us here is don't toil against your season, right? Don't fight against your season. Don't rage against the season that you're in. Instead, wisely accept, understand, gauge the times, and then determine how you can respond wisely in a way that's appropriate. Which would be a lot easier if we had a weather app for life, right? Wouldn't it be great? Because we don't always know the season that we're in. And in our own blindness, we may decide, no, I'm not in that kind of a season. Or we want to fight against the season. It'd be much easier if I could pull out my phone and say, okay, what season am I in exactly right now? And then if you could tell me how to dress accordingly, that would be helpful too. But this is what we don't want to, this is what we struggle with. And so we need other people in our lives. We need scripture. We need the guidance of the Holy Spirit. All of that to coach us in wisdom, to be able to say, okay, what season am I in? What is the weather actually like today? And how should I live accordingly? See, part of what he wants us to know as well is that the weather's going to change. That's the other part of my weather app here, is that I can click daily and I can see the next 15 days out. Now, that would be nice if I could actually see what the next season holds. But part of what Kohelet wants us to recognize in the changing of the seasons is that whatever season you're in, it will change. For some of you, that is really great news because you're in a very difficult season. And the temptation is to think that whatever season we're in is forever. Do you ever feel that way? I am in this season. This will never end. And Kohelet wants to say, no. Whatever season you're in, it will change. For some of you, that's wonderful news. You know, I see a lot of young moms and you're like, man, I'm in this season with little bitty kids. We can relate to that. This will never end. Yes, it will. They will grow up, right? Older dad here going, man, this is going to go faster than you know. Some of us, though, we find ourselves in a season that we love. This is the perfect season. I love it. It's Southern California season. And this is where we are. And it's just 75 all season, all year long. And Carlos says, no, no, no. Hey, enjoy it for the moment and recognize. And don't be surprised by it. This is what is amazing. This is what is astounding. We know that seasons will change. We don't want to believe it. We forget. And so he's reminding us, because how often are we surprised when things change? How often are we surprised when we wake up one day and it's snowing outside? We had no idea that that was coming. See, we don't have an app that tells us tomorrow the weather's there, you're in for a weather change. And yet, what Kohelet wants to say is that wisdom is anticipating, knowing this is a season, good or bad, and it's going to change. Are you ready? Are you ready for that? So I don't think that Kohelet here is saying whatever will be, will be. I think what he's describing here is actually much messier than that. It's much more complex. It's much more layered. And understand that he's not trying to give us even a formula. He's not giving us neat little categorizations for time or theological boxes that we can play in. If you look back at the list that he has here, you find that there are some things that we can control and some things that we can't. There's some things that we choose and some things that we have no choice in. There are some things that have to do with our emotions and how we respond emotionally, other with our actions, other just with what's going on in the world, a time for war and a time for peace. That is not, I don't control that. Okay. I don't control when I'm born and when I die. There's a complexity, there's a messiness to this that is uncomfortable. And he wants us to live in that. This is not a reassuring list in that regard. But what he wants to do is, he says, look, there are seasons of your life. Recognize them, that they are seasons that are coming and going. And they will change. And so dress for the weather, not for the calendar. The other thing he wants us to see in all of this, this is an all-exhaustive list of life. So poetically, he's not trying to tell you everything, but by creating the list that he does here, he's showing a completeness of life. And here's what's also messy about this, is that God has ordered the seasons, and yet God is not bound by the seasons. And so that even within the seasons that God himself allows and creates, that God is not subject to those seasons. That God can move in and out, and so there may be a time for something, and yet God says, yeah, I'm going to circumvent that. There's a time for this to occur, and he says, no, not now. And so, again, this is not us controlling. It's not up for us to understand everything that's happening. It is for us to be aware of the reality of life and the seasons of life and recognize that God is still over all of it. He's over all of it. And we're not in a position to understand why God allows the seasons that he does. And here's what's really discouraging. Are you ready for this? God allows and these seasons intentionally to frustrate us. Intentionally to frustrate us, to be reminded that he is the God over all the seasons. So that we may say, but God, this is the season for this. And he says, not so fast. In fact, this is what the writer goes on to say. What does the worker gain from his toil? Remember this language. He uses this a lot. What are you gaining from all your striving in the world? All of your toil, what does he gain? And it's a rhetorical question. Nothing. I have seen the burden God has laid on men. In other words, you can only control so much, but understand you will eventually bump up against the seasons. So you can dress according to the weather, but you can't change the weather. And God has intentionally laid this burden on us to frustrate us, to remind us that he is God and that we're not. That he is over all of the weather and he is over all of the seasons. They obey him, not the other way around. But here's the good side of it. Here's the good news. It's not all he's doing. Verse 11, he's made everything beautiful in its time. One of our struggles that actually provides great beauty, if we will see it as God intends us to see it, is that we want our stories to be complete in and of themselves. I want my story to be a complete story from beginning to end. Here's my wonderful novel or narrative that goes from beginning to end. But what Qohelet is reminding us here is that our story is simply part of a tapestry that God is weaving of all stories. That ultimately, my story, your story, they only make sense in light of God's story. And it's beautiful when seen in light of, as part of, the interweaving of God's story. Now I struggle against this. You struggle against this. Because what I want is for my story to be central. I want my story to be the story. And I want my story to have all the necessary ingredients and to have this perfect resolution and to live happily ever after. This is what I desire for my story. And what we're being called to here is actually a submission, right? To lay our stories down before his story. To recognize that my story is only one little bitty, you know, thread in the tapestry that he's weaving. And my thread may not look the way that I want my thread to look. It may not have the same dyes that I wish someone else's has. It may not be as long as someone else's. It may not have the same texture as someone else's. And I may be, in that sense, discontent and unhappy with the thread that God has given me of the tapestry that he is weaving. But what he's saying here is, look, all of this will be beautiful. And you have a part to play. And your story does have meaning. Your story does have significance because your story is that thread. And I need that thread. I want that thread. And by the way, you're going to be that thread whether you want it to be or not. Okay. So, we're constrained by the seasons. He burdens us with that, but then he invites us to see that our story is part of a much bigger story. And can we accept that? I think that's one of the questions that we have to wrestle with. I find as I get older, this is the question that no longer is easy or a given. So when I was younger, it was much easier for me to say, well, of course, I can accept whatever story God gives me. Because in my mind, all the story was up and to the right. Everything was going to be beautiful and wonderful all the time because I didn't know any better, you know. And as I get older, what I find is this question is much more difficult to answer, honestly, and is no longer a given. I recognize now the limitations. I see more clearly the end from the beginning. And I recognize just how small that little thread can be. And that can either be crushing or it can be liberating. But it's only liberating in light of the full tapestry. And I have to be able to see that. All right. Keep going. This is the next half of verse 11. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Now, this word eternity here that's translated, it comes from a Hebrew word that is incredibly vague and difficult to translate. And even the sense of it is very, very debated. And so most translations you're going to find translates this eternity. That's okay. Most scholars will say that often gives us the wrong impression. Okay. And so for that reason, a lot of scholars in their writings, they won't translate this eternity, they'll translate it ignorance or darkness, as in like, I can't see what's in front of me. And so the sense here is he has set ignorance in our hearts, is what most scholars are going to say. Now, if you want to hold on to eternity, that's fine. There's a lot of scholars who will still hold on to that. That's a reason that they translate it this way. But understand, it's most likely not in the sense of like this eternal meaning and purpose that's filling up my soul. Like he's longing for something bigger than himself and this eternity of significance. That's not what he probably has in mind here, because Qohelet is very, very grounded, okay, when in his writing. But what he may be saying here with eternity is that he simply wants things to last forever. That there's a desire that we have for the season that we're in to never change and to never end. And so I wish my kids would stay young forever. I wish they'd never grow up. I know some of you, no, that's not true. At a certain age, we wish, I don't know, maybe there's a moment that you really wish would last forever. Right now. See, there's a mom, she says, I wish this would last forever, this moment right here. And yet we cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. We want our happily ever afters. You notice in the movies or the stories, when there's the happily ever after, there's no end. There's no end to it. It's this eternity that goes on forever and ever. You know, the prince gets the princess and they ride off. And in our minds, they just kind of keep riding, you know, and that's it. And so we desire these happily ever afters. And what he's reminding us here is that we long for that. But we don't see what God has planned from beginning to end. And there is a beginning to end because we're just that thread. All right. So then he says, I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. In other words, you don't know what God has planned for you. You know that you're in a season. You know that it's going to change. You wish that it would last forever, but it's not going to. So in light of that, what is your response? What is our response? It's to see the good gifts that God gives to us, to enjoy all that he has provided, that everyone may eat, drink, and find satisfaction. Eat, drink, and be merry, even in our toil, because that too is a gift from God. Now, let me throw a little problem in here. So there's this guy, Epicurus. And he says this, do not spoil what you have by desiring what you have not. Remember that what you now have was once among the things that you only hoped for. It's a beautiful statement in one sense. So Epicurus is the founder of Epicureanism, which is a hedonistic philosophy. He doesn't believe in an afterlife. He doesn't believe in God. He doesn't believe there's anything beyond this. So what he's saying here is, and understand in light of his whole philosophy, is eat, drink, and be merry, because this is it. So, and he's not saying take advantage of and like drink more than you can possibly or have like so many relationships with so many. That's not what he's saying. He's saying enjoy it at an appropriate level because that's actually the way to maximize enjoyment. Okay. And so there's wisdom in that. Like you can hear it. Don't spoil what you're enjoying now by only thinking about what you don't have. But it's not quite what Kohelet is saying here. And I think the difference is really important because every once in a while you're going to hear people talk about this as being what Scripture is teaching us in terms of being content. That we're just supposed to enjoy what we have because that's what there is. But here's the problem. Anybody want to say what the problem is? Do you see it? There's a lot of different ways you can unpack it, so I understand it's kind of open-ended question. What's that? Sorry, I don't know where. What? Yeah, there is a live for the moment. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good place to start. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a little bit of, so he's a philosopher. I mean, come on, you know, he's not thinking so concretely, but yeah, he's going, yeah, don't spoil the meal that you have by wishing you had a different one. Like when you're sitting down and you're eating that steak that's just been beautifully cooked and marinated, you don't sit there and think, man, but I really wish there were some shrimp on top, you know, just no. He says, no, just enjoy the steak. Just enjoy the steak. That's not bad advice, right? It's not bad advice, but notice what he's saying here. Oh, Peter.
I was gonna say it's an up and to the right philosophy.
It is an up and to the right philosophy. There's a. I can only at one level I can only hold this when things are good. But he at the same time he is gonna say that still find the good even wherever you are. Okay. But yeah, there's a limit to this, okay? So here's how I'm going to say it, okay? There's a fatalism involved in this. Whatever there is, that's it. So as Andrew was pointing out, like it's not attached to the tapestry. What you have is all there is, and it doesn't point at anything else. That is a huge, as believers, this is a huge and tremendous difference. Because what Qohelet wants us to see is that these are gifts from a giver. These are the gifts. What does he say? The toil, even this is a gift from God. So that as I sit and I eat my steak, oh, and it's so good. I'm cutting it, it's like medium raw, you know, medium rare. That's my, not medium raw, medium rare, you know, cooked perfectly. I don't eat that many steaks, I'll be honest. But when I do, they're good, right? And you're eating that and you taste it and you're savoring it. And in that moment, you should be thinking, man, this comes from a good place. This too is a gift from God. And when I'm eating my bowl of Chex Mix and I'm like, man, the milk is a little lukewarm and it's kind of soggy because I've been dealing with my kids. Even in that, I should say, man, but how good is it that I'm having breakfast right now? This is a gift from God and I can enjoy my semi-soggy Chex Mix. Because there's a better Chex Mix coming. So this is how David Gibbons puts this. I like this. He says, some say, eat, drink, and be merry because that's all there is. This is Epicurus. This is all there is. Enjoy it. You got nothing else. There's nothing else to hope for. That's all you get. So enjoy it for what it is. Maximize your pleasure in that moment by enjoying it. It's all you're going to get. The preacher says, eat, drink, and be merry because that's what there is right now. Exactly. Nailed it. Right now. Because what there is points us to what is to come and to where it came from. That's what the preacher's saying. So I put it this way. This is the difference between seeing life as a gift and seeing life as a possession. Christina Lake is a professor at Wheaton University, and she, or is it Wheaton College? College, thank you. And I heard her give a lecture recently on biotechnology as it's related to bioethics. Hugely complex, really messy topics. It's a mess. But one of the things that she suggests as we try to sort of like weave our way through a lot of ethical questions, and I think it goes far beyond bioethics, it's just this distinction between how we see life and how we see, I'll put it in our context, how we see time, either as a gift or as a possession. Because as a possession, it means that it's something that I own, it is something that I can manage, it is something that I have every right to, it is something that owes me, it is something that I can manipulate and I can change. But a gift, seeing time as a gift, seeing life as a gift, is to recognize that it is undeserved, that it is not something that is owed me, and is not something that I possess in the sense that I have every right to change or manipulate or do whatever I would like to do with it. See, what the teacher is reminding us is that time is a gift. Whatever time that you have, it's a gift. And if you see it as a possession, then it will only leave you dissatisfied. Because you will spend all of your time trying to manipulate it, trying to change it, trying to control it, raging against the season that you're in. But when you see it as a gift, you recognize that it's undeserved, something to be enjoyed as a good gift from God. I heard a wise man say it this way, Andy Wildman, grace inevitably leads to a life of gratitude. Entitlement leads to a life of shallow dissatisfaction. See, grace is seen that all of life is a gift. The time that we have is a gift. And that leads to gratitude. But entitlement is saying, oh, this is something that I'm owed, something that I possess. And it only leads to dissatisfaction. And so the teacher says, I know there is nothing better for men than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This too is the gift of God. Doesn't that just sound good? Don't you want to live like that? Don't you wish that you spent more time enjoying the gifts that you have than wishing for all the things you don't. Don't you long, as I do, for the ability to enjoy the present, to enjoy the moment, to enjoy the gifts that God gives, instead of always looking for the next best thing? Thank you, Samsung. In fact, we're so bad at this. I was just reflecting on this week. We're so bad at this that it's often so much easier. I spend so much more time complaining about even the good gifts that I have than enjoying them. You ever find yourself doing that? Complaining about the job that keeps you gainfully employed and provides food for your family and a roof over your head? But how much time do you spend giving thanks to God for the job that you have as opposed to complaining to God about the job that you have? Or the house that you have that's not as nice as somebody else's house? Or just those children you have that are
nasty little beggers,
that are so healthy, they keep running around yelling and screaming and have to be taken to sports, right? How dare they? Right, this is such a discontented people. And this is the message that we need to be reminded of, because when I read this, I think this is what my heart longs for. This is what I desire, to be someone who enjoys life for what it is, for what it is. Alan.
So the way I view being
Epicurus.
His statement is like a circle. It never ends. There's no room for growth.
Mm.
But when you recognize that your life is a gift of God, you grow in that intellectually and spiritually.
Absolutely.
And you're not stuck in one place.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Growth is part of it. All right. Goes on. I know that everything that God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that men will revere him. So we have to move a little bit quickly here. So he's just saying, look, you don't get to thwart God's plan. You're not going to change God's plan. And God lets us know that. He lets us feel that in the changing of the seasons so that we revere him. So we remember that he is God. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. Let me really quickly, this is very, a lot of debate over what Kohelet is saying here, and almost nobody really lands anywhere because it's really hard to tell what he's saying. Can I give you one? This is my take, okay? And I like it. Take it for what, you know. I think what he's saying is this. And I'm getting this from other people. So this isn't me trying to be brilliant, okay? Because you're like, you wouldn't believe me. Okay. I think what he's saying is this. Look, you have things in your life, the past, that is not complete. You have things that in your past you never finished, that are stories, that little mini narratives that were never resolved, that were never fulfilled, that were never answered. And maybe it was a work that you tried to do. Maybe it was a relationship that ended far too abruptly. Maybe it was a regret that you have. All of these things are stories that end with resolutions that we do not want and do not desire. And I believe that what he's saying here is that God calls even the past to account, in that at one point God will bring resolution to all of those stories in the second Eden when the kingdom comes. We will see all of those things. We will see their place. We will see how they fit in the tapestry. And there will be a resolution that we may not ever see in this life. That's my take on this, okay? I wish I could give you a longer explanation that might have been helpful, but I just don't have time right now. I apologize. So here he goes. And I saw something else under the sun in the place of judgment. So here, if I'm right, this makes sense. This is why I see this in the context. Because now he's giving you an example. There's something that you're going to see that is not going to be resolved in this life, that is not going to be resolved in this world. I looked and I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I thought in my heart, though, but this is his resolution. One day, God will bring judgment, both the righteous and the wicked, for there will be a time for every activity, a time for every deed. In other words, one day, all of this is going to be wrapped up. all of those loose strings, all of those threads that didn't seem to have endings and are waving in the breeze, one day God will bring resolution. And he says, you're seeing injustice in this world, and one day I'm going to wrap it all up. It's all going to be tied off. It's all going to make sense. Okay. I apologize for the speed. Verse 18, I also thought, as for men, God tests them so that they may see that they are like animals. Man's fate is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animal. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the spirit of man rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? Real quick, he is not saying that he doesn't believe in an afterlife. He's giving us a picture of what do you see empirically? Like, what do you experience in life? Okay? He's going to talk about the afterlife later, so we know that's not what he's saying. Okay? But what he's saying here is, look, as far as you and I can see, as far as what our experience is with regard to death, we are no different than the animals. They die, we die. And what he's reminding us of here is that every day you are one step closer to death. You're welcome. Right? You are one step closer to becoming the dust that God created Adam out of. And that's what he wants us to see. So then he comes back again. What do we do? This is the reality as far as we experience, as far as we see it. And he concludes this way. So I saw that there is nothing better for a man than to enjoy his work. And when he says work here, understand, again, he's being poetic. He's talking about all the good gifts that God gives to us. Work, life, your spouse, your kids, food, drink. All of this, because that is our lot. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? In other words, don't worry about tomorrow. You don't know what it holds. You don't know what the season is. Be wise, be prepared. But in the meantime, enjoy the good gifts that God gives to you. Whatever time you have, it's a gift. So enjoy it. Enjoy it. Some of you saw this story. This week, I'm going to close with this. This is the last thing. Some of you saw this story this week. 24-year-old leaves the final game in the ALCS when Houston knew they were going to the World Series. A huge Astros fan, and he texts his mom as he leaves, I just spent $800 on a World Series ticket, hell yeah. And he gets in the car, and he's killed on the way home. On his way home to his wife of 2 years, high school sweethearts, 24 years old. This is life east of Eden. Life does not work the way it's supposed to. Life does not work the way that our hearts desire, the way that our hearts long for life to work, that we are longing for a happily ever after, but we are simply not there yet. This isn't Eden, and we can't create it. But rather than pretend that it is, we live wisely. We recognize that every season, every time, every day that you have is a gift. And then we look forward to the fact that one day it's all going to make sense. That one day Christ will return and he will wipe away every tear and he will tie up all the loose threads and we will see, to the extent that he allows us, the beautiful tapestry of all of the seasons. That's what we're longing for.